Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 130 of D&D Discussions, the podcast for players and DMs alike, where we cover a wide variety of topics to help you with your games. I'm your host, Ryan Reeder, and with me, as always, is my good buddy, Ben Bumhopper. How are you doing tonight, Ben?
I am doing pretty good, actually. It also helps if I pull up the show notes, because I was looking at our handy-dandy little recording program instead, and yep, in the notes it says, I am doing good, so I'm doing great.
Good. It's always nice when the notes can tell you exactly how to feel.
Exactly.
we've got some fun stuff to talk about tonight. Some new official things, but we're also going to kind of veer off a little bit on one of those and just kind of talk a little side topic about it too. So let's hop on in and get started with our first topic, which is D&D recently announced their brand new starter set, Heroes of the Borderlands, which is coming out a little later this year. And they have said this is supposed to be, I believe it's September is when it's coming out. And this is supposed to be their best starter set ever, which, you know, I hope so.
Yeah,
that sounds good, right? They've given a little peek of what's inside. So it's called, it said Heroes of the Borderlands. This set comes with actually quite a bit of stuff. It's going to have like full on maps in it. It's going to have a lot of like card based things and tile based things, tokens for doing battle maps and such. It's actually pretty impressive. And they even have like template grid-based player sheets for ease of use and ease of access. So I thought that was really kind of interesting because like card-based character sheets.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting, and it kind of breaks down things in a different way than what you'd see it on the actual normal character sheet as well. Like one of the real quick examples is like they show a wizard character sheet, and you know, where you find out all your different abilities and stuff, it has it listed actually under the stat that it goes with. So like strength has athletics under it, constitution has nothing under it, actually. I mean, except for the saving throw, but like, you know, wisdom, you can see that it has like animal handling, insight, medicine, perception, you know, things like that. And while I think that's interesting and it kind of works and it really, you know, teaches someone how to, you know, like what stat goes to what thing, I don't know if that's the best way for introducing someone to the abilities, especially if you're saying, hey, I need this type of role. And then they have to look into, you know, six different sections to figure out, oh, I need deception, that's under charisma, after looking at the other five first. But that's just a little nitpicky thing. And we'll get into this more in depth later. But overall, though, I do like the fact that on the kind of placards from what they've shown, it does have like kind of tips on how to play certain classes. It has places for you to put like magic items and different kind of like spells and different things. And also, you know, different card sets and stuff for like your species, your background. And it, you have like a kind of a quick reference to that, which I think is actually pretty cool. You know, having a ton of information is essentially what every character sheet is, and introducing anybody into it in a just a wall of text is never a good thing. So having, you know, visual aids, having, you know, color, I mean, just something as simple as color.
This looks really very colorful.
Yeah. It's a really good way of, you know, like kind of making it eye catching and giving them, you know, some of the better shortcuts to find some of those things that they would need.
I also noticed just in one of the pictures, the spell cards it has as well, like the Burning Hands on one side, it looks like it has the description and all the stuff. And then on the back side of it, it has an actual graphic of what the cone looks like and how many like squares it covers and stuff. I think that's super cool.
Oh, most definitely. I mean, the fact that it, you know, cones are one of the things that people can sometimes have the hardest thing, you know, just kind of visualizing on a map without, you know, some sort of template and stuff, you know, having to kind of draw it out or figure out, it's like, okay, well, this first one and then the two next to it, or, you know, kind of figuring that. But having it right there, you can just kind of see, oh, well, this is kind of the way that it's going to go. And especially if they're, since they're including like battle maps and everything like that, you have really a good way of just plopping it right down on the map for everybody to kind of see.
Yeah. Yeah. No, overall, it looks very interesting. They also talked about it being highly replayable.
Yeah.
Which is also very interesting as well.
Yeah. That's one of the things that I think is kind of neat that a lot of people don't touch on in like some of the campaign books. Like Rime of the Frostmaiden is a good example where there's a lot of different stuff and different like side quests and everything that you can, you know, take and go down, and there's different paths through it. I know that Strahd is supposed to be kind of the same way, how there's a lot there that, you know, your players might not ever come across or get to. So having this be something that is replayable and have different things, you know, just happen in a starter pack means that, you know, you can get this, give it to, you know, a group of people. They want to play it. Great. You have someone DM, they run it. Maybe they didn't like DMing. Well, you have the starter pack already. You can have someone else run it. They're going to come across and do different things anyway. The story will be different. It gives them a chance to kind of, you know, explore different areas. And like overall, it's a really good way of giving everybody a nice chance to kind of, you know, try out different roles in the campaign or in the starter of it anyway.
Yeah, no, I think it's very interesting. And it sounds like there's like a DM guide. There's a big battle map for each of the three main areas in the adventure and a booklet for each of them. Monsters will have tokens and corresponding monster cards for the DM. So yeah, I think this is very good. And I think this kind of leads us to the other piece we were wanting to talk about. What makes a good starter set? Just we were kind of talking about that a little bit as the announcement video came out, and that, you know, it was like, what, you know, Ben, what would make the perfect starter set, right? Is this the perfect starter set, or could there be more? Is there other stuff we would do? And so I don't know. I was thinking about it, and obviously I think what they're showing is pretty close to what I would probably consider the best type of starter set for new players.
Yeah.
Right. The card based stuff makes things very easy to mix and match. Everything is colorful. Color is a big one, I think. Make it look flashy, make it look stand outish as you're doing stuff. The battle maps and the tokens are a really big deal as well. I think that's a very strong thing, especially since most of their stuff seems to be moving a little more toward grid-based. And just grid-based in general is a little easier to understand because it's visually laid out for you. I can see that I'm 10 feet away from something. I can see that something is over on that ledge or whatever. Mm-hmm. So for brand new players, being able to conceptualize that in space is a really big deal. Obviously, I didn't see if it was or not, but I like when starter sets include just a full dice set. I think that is really a good idea to just make sure people have all the tools they need. The DM booklet, like tips for DMing, mm-hmm. I think is really good. And then modularizing it. Right. Being able to mix and match things, increasing the replayability. I don't know. Again, I don't know if it has it or not. We don't have the full spec sheet on this, but a DM screen, like a simple, like easy to use DM screen, I think is a big thing and should be included in any sort of a starter set that you would have. And make sure that you have not too many options, but enough flexibility so that people can feel like they're building something, not necessarily just grabbing a pre-made thing. But again, with the modular system, the card-based system, I think that helps solve the problem of kind of the analysis paralysis decision overload.
Yeah. And I really think that's the way that they can really maximize, you know, for a huge audience with that is that to have, you know, like a template version of, okay, so the wizard choose this card, this card, this card, and this card for, you know, like species, background, and everything like that. You know, like have that, you know, versions of that there for people who, you know, just want to get in and jump in and just play right away. Or on top of that, just someone who, you know, they're really wary about what they want to do and say, well, you know, here are these templates you can kind of go off of. And then based on how, you know, comfortable someone is with, you know, creating something, then you do have that modular approach to it of, you know, the different types of, you know, species cards, background cards, and everything that they can kind of go through. And what's even cooler at that point is that, you know what, you can have everybody, you know, kind of pick at the same time and create characters together. You can do like a high low like draft system of, you know, you pick your species first and someone else gets to, you know, there's different ways that you can kind of do character creation just with that. So that's, you know, it really kind of, you know, subtly enforces choice into Dungeons and Dragons before they even start playing, which, you know, one of the big things that I love about this game is the fact that you have a lot of free will with what you can do. So having options to begin with, but then knowing that there's more on top of that and, you know, it just kind of grows exponentially as you play the game is neat that it can start in such a small way. I think you're right. It does need to have, you know, some sort of battle maps, just because, again, it is a lot easier to get into it having a visual aspect and kind of knowing what things look like, how they work before, you know, jumping deeper into, you know, theater of the mind stuff. Just at least in my experience, I started out needing a battle map. Otherwise, I'm constantly, you know, asking, like, how far away am I? Am I within range of this? You know, am I close to this person? You know, things like that. This will give them, you know, that exact layout right there. Until, you know, kind of later on, you're able to kind of wheel and deal and freestyle. And you also learn how to pay attention through the battle to kind of, you know, keep track of what's going on.
It takes one less thing off of the brain load.
Yeah.
For exactly. When you're learning something new.
Exactly. I think that the spell cards are perfect in the fact that, you know, it says what it is, says what it does, but then also has, like you said, that cone for the burning hands was perfect. A picture that we have of a weapon is, you know, it has their weapon and it says it's this type of damage, slashing damage, and then it shows 2d6 plus strength. So you see exactly which die you roll. You know, for your damage and everything, which I think is fantastic. More pictures of what the die looks like, I think, is very helpful for people who, you know, they're used to a D6, but they don't understand the numbers on it. So somehow it's a different die than what they've used, you know, playing regular board games for forever. So just having a visual representation is great. It helps out a lot. And, you know, just having kind of a variety of, you know, locations and stuff actually is really great too. I was looking through here. It's so there's a keep, caves, and wilderness, like three main areas. That's a good variety in there. So again, you have different types of monsters, you have different environments, different things can happen in there. So you have a bit of variety in that. And then again, I'm just going to focus one more time just on the replayability. I think that is an excellent thing to have for a starter set, especially if, like, you know, say this is for, you know, like a group of kids or teens or whatever who don't have a job, who can't go out and get a whole bunch of different, you know, modules and stuff. They have this as a good basis and, you know, can run through it a couple times before they're like realizing, I'm going to add on top of this with my own stuff, you know, maybe do their own homebrewing stuff with this. You know, there should be something in that DM guide about homebrew and adding things to it as well. That way they can kind of get the idea of, you know, kind of go with the flow and be or understand that changing what's in this box is part of D&D on top of everything else. So yeah, I mean, I'm really, really curious to see how this goes, how it plays out, and everything that's kind of in there. And I will probably pick this up in September when it comes out, just because it's a good tool to have.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I usually end up picking up the starter sets, and most of the starter sets usually end up going on sale quite a bit, a little bit after. I know I've picked up the Stormwreck Cove and the Dragon of Icespire Peak for, you know, $10 or $15 a piece. Yeah. Like very, very, very reasonable.
And this will most likely come with a die. So, I mean, just a set of dice is $10 usually, you know, yeah, like the cheapest.
Exactly.
Version. So you get all this with that when it goes on sale.
Yeah. And honestly, like I think their starter sets has been a little hit and miss, before I think the original, Lost Mines was actually a pretty decent, first adventure and first starter set, albeit a little high difficulty in a few spots at the beginning, if not ran correctly. I thought the Stormwreck Isle was probably the weakest of the three that they've done so far, but I really liked Dragon of Icespire Peak.
Yeah,
quite a bit.
Yeah, that's the one that had actually, like the helpers or whatever that
yes, they put in. Yeah, the
NPCs.
Yeah, the hirelings or whatever they called them. Yeah. And it had some card based stuff. It had some card based items and card based quests. It had everything laid out. There was some maps as well, and it was non-linear too. So you could kind of do stuff. I ran that solo for several sessions with my wife when I was teaching her how to play D&D, and it ended up being pretty cool and fairly fun. And we had a good time with it, and I could totally see that being a really good start. And it came with dice as well. So that right now, in my mind, at least, is kind of the gold standard for starter kits. So at least in these previews, it's looking like they've learned a lot. This will likely surpass it. And they even talked about how there's going to be a video for how to like play / run it, that you can just kind of, you know, scan the QR code or whatever.
That's cool.
That is also going to be a companion to it, which I really like, especially if it's like a Chris Perkins, like, you know, 5-10 minute video of, hey, this is how to run this, or Justice. He was the one that announced it in the video. Apparently, he was the lead designer for this specific thing. So yeah, hopefully, you know, just something like that in the video, just a short, you know, 5-15 minute video of like, this is how to run it. This is how like the flow goes. Here's some tips, for doing this adventure, et cetera. So I have high hopes.
Yeah.
And again, this is going to be coming out sometime in September. Okay.
Yeah, I am very much looking forward to it. I think it's going to be pretty great.
Yeah. Yeah. It's especially now that we're in 2024 world, or 5.5e, because that's just easier to say and probably more accurate. It's good to have a starter set for that, because this is the first starter set post rules revision.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that this is an excellent time to do it. Having something come out this year, especially as they are trying to really hype and sell the new rules, the 5.5e, the revision they've done. So having a starter set that goes directly with those new rules, I think also will be a really good thing.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, on to our next thing. So officially, again, this is just a week and a half ago. The official account dropped a brand new video, brand new Unearthed Arcana update for Eberron. So those of you who are following 5e or have been just D&D fans for a long time, Eberron is one of the dearly beloved D&D settings. There was the whole campaign setting book, Eberron Rising from the Last War, as well, that has already come out in 5e. And so what this, it sounds like, is going to be is kind of a continuation of the Eberron setting, but also an update for the Artificer class.
Yeah.
Which we've been a lot of people are looking forward to. An update to the Dragon Mark system, and then just kind of an updated guide, essentially. And so in this UA, they introduced several new things. They introduced they made some tweaks to the Artificer class. They introduced a brand new Artificer subclass called the Cartographer. And they added a bunch of feats and dragon marks, which are kind of Eberron's what would the best description of a dragon mark be? Like a family tattoo. Yeah,
like a clan
type thing. Like a clan thing. Yeah. But they also provide magical abilities. Mm-hmm. Right. And so they've got a bunch of those. It's a 15-page Unearthed Arcana. So we'll obviously have the link to that in the show notes on dndiscussions.com if you want to check it all out. But Ben, what did you think of the brand new Artificer subclass? I know they tweaked some stuff in the Artificer. They tweaked some of the tinkering and the replicate magic item. I'm sure based on some of the feedback they got from the first release of the Artificer UA. But this new Artificer subclass, the Cartographer, is very map focused, obviously, because Cartographer, but it has some really interesting pieces to it.
Yeah, it's okay. So Artificers have been known as like, okay, if you want to play Iron Man, you play an Artificer. If you want to be an Alchemist, you play an Artificer. If you want to be, I don't know, a cannoneer or whatever, have like artillery, you be an Artificer. This one is really like, it's a different kind of way of looking at it. You know, it's not just a magical engineer. This is, what's
the best little bit ranger-ish Artificer.
Yeah. Like a more magical ranger than a ranger would be. But it's a lot of it's based on like location and I mean, you're a cartographer, so you make maps. And the idea behind it is kind of cool how you're able to, like on a long rest, you can create a map and like hand it out to other people in your party. And based on that, like they get a 1d4 to initiative rolls. And, even more so, like you're able to know where those other party members are, which is pretty great. And on top of that too, like if you're able to, or if you're casting a spell or doing some sort of effect that requires you to see the target, if you're holding the map and someone else has a version of the map too, you can target them. You don't even need to see them. So, you know, if you're in different rooms and I need to cast, you know, Healing Word on you, boom, it can be done because I know where you are because of the map. But even more so, they really lean into this magical map that you're able to make. And like you're able to, you know, jump to the other character. You know, later on, you can use your flash of genius to like, you know, move within 30 feet of them and stuff. And one of the things that I think is just awesome is all the way up at level 17, if someone who is, you know, holding one of your maps, their hit points get reduced to zero, they can just like teleport to you, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. The level 15 superior Atlas. Very, very cool. And if you are one of the map holders in that one too, you can also cast Find the Path without expending the cell slot, which makes total sense.
Oh yeah.
Like exactly. That's like a quintessential thing for this.
And if you're holding onto a map, you don't lose concentration when you take damage.
Yeah.
I think that's just, it's really cool. It's a weird thing to lean into, but I'm kind of all for it.
A lot of teleporting.
Yeah.
As well. It's level 5, level 9. There's a lot of, very, very high movement based subclass,
mm-hmm.
which I think is super interesting. It's worth watching the Unearthed Arcana video, because Mackenzie is the one who designed this, and she is just like bubbling joy.
Yeah. Oh, it's so great.
and it's super fun to watch her talk about it, because she explains kind of the design mechanical work behind it, that they did, because I believe she led the design of this subclass. It's very interesting. I think this not necessarily would fit into every campaign, but I think it adds some much needed variety, even more variety to the Artificer, because the Artificer has a lot of really diverse subclasses, but this is very unique in terms of subclasses, period.
Yeah, it feels like it adds a bit of whimsy to the class. Like, you know, the other three are, you know, except for maybe the Alchemist, they feel like really kind of, I mean, of course, Eberron is a very kind of oppressive setting, but this, it really does feel like it's, you know, it's more whimsical. There's like, you know, some fun to it, as opposed to I'm building my suit of armor to jump into the demon fray or something, you know. It's like, hey, I can just pop over there. It's pretty cool. I know where everything is. I got the map for it, you know.
Exactly. It's the man in the chair.
Yeah. Oh, that's totally what it is.
Yeah, I'm the guy in the chair. This is the what was his name? In Spider-Man.
Ned.
Yeah. So this is the Ned. This is your Oracle, right? This is your Barbara Gordon directing things from the computer. It kind of clicked. I think she might have even like said something along those lines. And that's kind of when it clicked in my head. Is, oh, that's cool. That's a cool concept. This is the dude in the van that is directing everything while the heist goes on and such. I love the concept. Yeah,
And especially
and it's very unique.
If you look at the cartographer spells, like Fairy Fire, you're pointing things out to people. Guiding Bolt, you give them that advantage on that. Locate Object, Clairvoyance, Freedom of Movement, Locate Creature, Scrying, Teleportation Circle. I mean, it really fits into that theme. And I'm kind of digging it. Like, to be completely honest, Artificer has never really, like, pulled me in as a thing that I really want to play. Like, it's not like Warlocks where they're just horrible and I don't want to play them at all, but Artificer is just, you know, it's just kind of there. It just didn't have a draw. I'm kidding. Warlock players, as I've said, 2024 has changed it and it looks kind of cool now, but this is like something I really feel like I can get behind, you know, doing a support as an Artificer and just popping around the map and just having fun with it.
Yeah. Very, very fun concept. I'm excited to hear stories as people start being able to play this subclass. And as they bring the Artificer up to 2024 5.5 standards as well.
Oh yeah. And I need to have a cartographer artificer as an NPC somewhere in my world.
Yes, that does sound like a super fun NPC.
Oh, it's a
great idea.
Definitely. Like your party needs to find something, and you know, they have the name of this person, and then they kind of show up and they, you know, they're in their little home or something trying to find something. They're just popping about, just porting all over the place, trying to find like this one map of this location or something like that. I think it'd be super fun.
I'm Ornok Mapmaker, and I will be your guide through the dense jungle of
Evermore. Yeah,
that would be super fun.
That'd be cool. That's
super fun.
I like this.
great concept. So yeah, definitely check that out. We'll have, like I said, we'll have the link in the show notes on DNDiscussions.com if you want to check out the UA or watch the video on it, both of which I highly recommend.
Yeah, and there's a bunch more stuff in there too. Specifically, you know, more spells that are, you know, related to the Artificer. All those Dragonmark feats are in there. There's like 28 feats in this UA. We're not even going to come close to touching any of them because they're all very specific. But there's also some epic boons in there as well. So, I mean, just, yeah, definitely check it out.
Yeah. also in the things that Wizards has done in the last like 2 weeks or so, kind of out of the blue.
Yeah, this was a surprise.
Yeah, Wizards released the first version of Project Sigil.
Yeah.
And it's available now to download for free off of D&D Beyond. You obviously will get a lot more out of it if you are a master tier D&D Beyond subscriber. But if you are just a free content user, you can, there is a single player mode you can have. You can join multiplayer rooms, and you can also play the introductory. It comes with an introductory adventure, kind of the maps, the minis, and all the stuff is pre-built and ready to go. So, which I think is really good. I think it's really good that they have an introductory adventure and all the pieces and all the maps built out for it, because that's a really easy way to introduce people. But if you are in that master tier, you get to actually create and host multiplayer rooms. You get to edit the introductory adventure, share and load maps, save maps. You know, there's a lot more painted minis available. There's custom mini slots, there's custom mini outfits, and then there's builder kits. So they've got like this dungeon, basic dungeon, crude mines. Basic dungeon's the free one.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, if you're a master tier subscriber, you get crude mines, graveyard, owlbear forest, and rustic village that you can create with. I downloaded it. I checked it out. It's actually pretty neat, honestly, for the most part. There's not near as much D&D Beyond integration as I would have liked. And I also would be remiss if I did not mention it is powered by Unreal Engine 5, which is a very common, highly used game engine, but it's also fairly beefy. So this is something you actually have to download and install on your computer to play.
Yeah, not a browser-based kind of thing.
It looks like it's just Windows-based currently.
So far.
Yeah. And so and it's one of those things where it's just like, it's cool. It's cool that they have it. Accessibility-wise, it's a little more iffy. Obviously, there's no Mac version of it. There is no browser-based version of it, which I feel like in a lot of ways is very key to making it actually accessible to people. Because you can do UE5 through browser. Like, there are other things that allow you to do that, like 3D things in browser. You don't have to have quite as beefy of a computer to do those types of things. But obviously, the system requirements are still going to be there. And you're not going to be able to just play it on anything, on a potato computer. Obviously, you'll want something from the last several years to be able to do this. So I'm really wondering, honestly, what the target audience for this is. Because once the Coolio, it's a nice program, things look really pretty, I can build custom stuff, wears off, it's one of those things where every one of your players will have to install this fully.
Yeah.
And be able to run it. And it has to be on Windows as well. And so, at least right now. And so it feels like that really limits the audience down a decent bit. Obviously, the prep work, if you're not playing something pre-made, which as of now, the only pre-made thing is that introductory adventure. So obviously, there's going to be a lot more prep work for the DM to create all this stuff in 3D assets Mm-hmm. Even though the builder is not bad, it's really not.
No. The builder is actually pretty good.
It's still going to be decently time consuming to build something in 3D versus something like the 2D VTT, where you throw on a pre-made JPEG map and throw some tokens on it, right? This is a much more involved thing, a little more video game like than we're probably used to. And so I don't know, Ben. We talked about D&D Beyond and the need for structural updates for that site last episode. And to me, as cool as this is, it feels like all this time and money and development would have been better served investing into their 2D VTT and into D&D Beyond, the site itself.
You know, the thing I'll say about that, as the person who's playing constantly on the VTT for the 2D version of it, almost every time I boot that up for a play session, there's updates. And that has been growing very steadily. They've been doing a fantastic job with that. So more money thrown at that. I don't know if it would matter much or not, but I'm happy with how that's going. I would love to do more with this, but I have a feeling of my five players, one of them might not have a computer that can run it. Otherwise I would probably swap to this because I love three-dimensional everything with D&D. I love miniatures. I love playing with miniatures. You know, we have to play over Discord because, you know, there are people who live out of state. So, you know, it's not like they can just kind of jaunt over every other week just to, you know, play a game for a couple hours and then head back home. So I would love to be able to do this. You're right, though. The time constraints would be a bit more, especially if, I mean, gosh, can you imagine if I can use Dungeon Alchemist and then export that into Sigil? Like that would be the dream right there, because that just,
yeah,
just you just auto generate all this stuff. Or if comes to Sigil, that'd be perfect.
Don't expect that if you are a Dungeon Alchemist user for building stuff.
It is literally like, place the plate here.
Place your tiles.
And then
it's like taking a bunch of Dwarven Forge and building it up, but it's much slower.
Yeah. And the set dressing isn't near as advanced.
Yeah.
And no, I mean,
having Dungeon Alchemist combined with this would be fairly huge. Yeah. That'd be fairly huge, because that's already a 3D thing. And I've used Dungeon Alchemist before, but usually it's to make the thing and then either have the, you know, animated web GIF or whatever that you can throw in the VTT. Mm-hmm. And have some of the cool stuff, or just literally taking the screenshot or exporting it.
Yeah.
And printing it out. Right. And so it's, if you're looking for something like that, this is not it. That is far more advanced from a building perspective and a set dressing perspective, and much more time efficient.
Yeah. But if you're really looking for the experience of building something from scratch with, like, again, with like a Dwarven Forge kind of thing or something like that, this is for you. I mean, yeah, money was put here. It could have gone to D&D Beyond. Like, we can discuss that as much as you want. And it's always going to end up with, they want to diversify, and, you know, putting programming into this versus programming into the website, they're different languages, probably different types of programmers. So again, I don't know. It all comes down to where you want to put the money, I guess. But I like the fact that now, if there is a 3D, you know, tabletop that I can use, I have it through D&D Beyond, which I already pay a subscription to. I don't have to try to do something super robust or anything with, like, say, Fantasy Grounds or, what's the other one that I can't think of the name right now, but whatever
Roll20?
It is. Well, Roll 20. I didn't know they had a 3D version.
Albert Rodeo.
Yeah.
Oh, but, no, you're talking like a full on 3D version.
Yeah.
Tailspire.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know,
Tailspire is the other big 3D, full 3D version.
Yeah. So basically it's one of those things where I have this already, you know, I pay for the master tier because I'm the DM and I like having all the options for that stuff. So this is just an extra tool that's been handed to me. And I like that. We don't know if there's going to be more like, hey, buy this figure pack. We don't know any of that stuff.
That's what I'm worried about.
Yeah.
I think the
monetization
extra,
of it.
Yeah. The monetization of it. Cause right now I'm hoping ideally subscribers will just get everything. The master tier subscribers just get all the stuff, period. But my worry is because this is developing extra assets, especially 3D assets mm-hmm. and such, new things, new modules and stuff will come at an additional cost.
Yeah. And I mean, we discussed it before. The 2D tabletop is the same exact way, or kind of, you know, I'm assuming it's going to be the same exact way where if you own the module, you have access to like the figure and the stat blocks and stuff, you know, when they start introducing that sort of thing. Because again, this, even though it's available, it doesn't say it's in beta where like the encounter builder is, or like the 2D VTT is, but based off of just, you know, things that I've seen in the Discord and stuff, about it, it's not complete. They're still working on it. They're still working on improvements and everything like that.
Yep.
So
yep.
Like go into this, assuming it's still a beta build. We don't have the final word on any of this yet, but for bare bones, for what it is, the product that they've given us now, it's cool.
Yeah, it's worth, if your computer supports it and your entire group's computers support it,
mm-hmm.
which is the big one for sure. It's worth checking out the introductory adventure because it's not super big. It's fairly well put together. And I think it gives a really good kind of first impression of the system and how it works.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not insanely beefy, but still there are going to be some computers out there that, you know, more than 5 years old that are going to have a real rough time running it. The recommended stuff is beefy, but the minimum, not super, super hard.
So again, this is just kind of first impressions, FYI. Obviously, you will need a master tier subscription to get the most out of what is here right now. But you can, even with the free, just download it and check out the basic adventure stuff and what has been put together for that.
Yeah.
So it's worth doing that regardless, just to kind of see if it's your feel. But like Ben said, if you have the time and all your players have the computer and the recommended requirements and such, it does get a lot closer to building out physical terrain is if you were kind of sitting in a living room with a built out set of stuff for a battle or a location or something like that.
Plus, if you look at on D&D Beyond on the subscription page, now it says master tier, virtual tabletops and content sharing. Yeah, all hero tier benefits, plus share purchase content with friends, host games with maps and Sigil VTTs. So yeah, and then there's a plus unlock additional Sigil 3D VTT features. So yeah, I mean, they're throwing it right there in the subscription now too.
Yeah, it'll be, like I said, it'll be interesting to see. Because if they keep all the content that they release to the master tier sub as like an add-on, that would be amazing and ideal.
Yeah,
for sure. For sure. My guess is eventually they'll offer, my hope is that if you sub to the master tier, it just unlocks everything until you're not subbed anymore.
Yeah.
But it also allows you, my guess is it will allow you to buy things individually so you don't have to sub. That's my guess.
It'd be pretty great.
We will see how it evolves over the next year or so, because as Ben said, it is still very much a work in progress. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Definitely.
Yeah, go check it out. We'll have a link to that in the show notes as well. And then finally, community content shout out. I absolutely loved this video so much. Wired does these little tech support videos through a variety of topics with a variety of people where they just answer questions sent in for whatever the topic is. They recently, just a few days ago, did one with Brendan Lee Mulligan answering D&D questions. And it is very good, incredibly entertaining. It's Brennan being Brennan. It's like 33 minutes long. And I'm sure whoever edited this had to edit it down from like 4 hours.
Probably. Yeah, he's very verbose and in such the best way.
In the best way. There's a lot of really good questions and good information from him. So it's very, very Brennan, just saying what Brennan does. So highly recommend checking it out. Very worthwhile 30 minutes of your time as he answers a bunch of different questions, from like newer stuff to just like his thoughts on world building, to playing in another person's campaign setting, because he recently experienced that with the Xander Unlimited stuff, playing around in Matt Mercer's world. So really, really good video. I absolutely loved it. So we'll have a link to that in the show notes as well.
Yep.
All right. And with that, that brings us to the close of our episode. Of course, as always, we will talk a little bit about what we have done in our home games before we wrap things up. So, Ben, did you get to play at all since we last talked?
Yes, we did. The long drought of not playing has finally, hopefully, cleared up now for the rest of the year. We'll see how that goes, though, because life sucks sometimes. But so last we left off, there was we did a whole topic about it on the show, about real world kind of political stuff coming into the game. They ran into some really bad characters, some really racist people. And then the next day, a group of really good people showed up and basically said, hey, we saw what happened in the market or in the guild hall. That doesn't represent us. We're going to hook you up for this party. So basically the biggest name, like clothing designer of the country, showed up and was like, you're going to wear my stuff. This is my statement as, hey, unity, togetherness, all that stuff is the important thing going forward. So I was like, hey, I got to do something kind of cool like that after playing some really horrible people. I like having that little bit of palate cleansing sometimes, because sometimes, you know, it's not spoken about enough. I think that DMs, if you try to be a good person, when you're running a game with some really bad characters in there, sometimes it's really hard to do. To have to jump into that mindset to play as. So,
man, that sounds like a whole show topic.
You know, we probably should cover that. write that one down. There have been a couple times in my game where I'm like, I cannot continue with this sort of play. We're just going to jump to the next scene and stuff. This is one of those things where it's like, it felt bad playing that way. And being able to kind of like stick it to the man who is also me was really great. So I really enjoyed that. They went to the big gala, and there was a lot of really interesting kind of talk going on. They were able to kind of clock where everybody stood in this whole, division of ideals and stuff. which will, I'm assuming, probably come in pretty handy. But, you know, they kind of listened and walked and introduced themselves, talked to some people, saw reactions of other people when they entered the room, since, you know, this is a very pro elf household, it being a mob, the mob family that they are. And then they were able to kind of break away to, since that this, whole thing is in, is like a monthly celebration of like art and, you know, poetry, music, and things like that. They broke away with, you know, one of the servants of the household to, you know, kind of be taken on a tour of some of the other areas to view some of the art and everything. So they were able to, go in and kind of go into the library, and that's where they found out and, realized that, yeah, the waitstaff is treated like crap. So when they were given a nice little 2 gold tip or whatever, they're immediately on the side of the party of like, yeah, screw these guys, I'll do whatever you need, because they're not paying me well, they're treating me like crap and everything. So I'm like, this is working out way better than I thought as a DM. So I had no idea that was ever going to play into it. But yeah, they walked in, just kind of gave them a little gold tip. I'm like, waitstaff is on their side now. They're going to do what they can to help, because they know bad stuff's going on. Don't know what, but bad stuff's going on. So they were in there and, you know, kind of looked around the library and stuff. Didn't really find a whole lot. But the servant dude was basically like, yeah, we're allowed to take you anywhere in the house except for this one area. So they definitely have the breadcrumb to go to that place. But instead of, you know, continuing on their exploration and going, they went back to the room because like, well, we've been missed for a while, so let's go back. And I'm like, okay, you can do that. Except now I need to have a talk with you guys before our next session, just so that you know that I'm not going to be a huge stickler on real world stuff, because this is a game. Do the crazy things, because again, I love my group. They're very good at what they do, and they come up with such creative solutions. But they need to understand that D&D isn't you have to do the perfect plan every time. You can do some crazy chaos and stuff. It can work. You don't need to worry about being missed too long in the fake party that I'm throwing. You know, it'll be okay. So gonna do a little refresh reminder on that and kind of see how it goes. And as a DM, it's one of those things where it's like, you know what? I might have pushed the fact that this might be a thing that happens. So again, I want to kind of clear the air on that and make sure like that's going on, you know, so, or that I'm not like pushing the wrong thing of, if you do something wrong, you're going to be punished. It's going to be, you do stuff and then the world happens and we're going to have fun and see what happens. So I want to make sure that we're all on the same page for that, because, you know, it's more fun for me if they do crazy stuff. It's going to be way more fun for them if they do crazy stuff too. But at the same time, they want to succeed and I want to push for that too. So however they want it to play out, that's the way it's going to play out. I just want to make sure that they know that they can try weird, crazy things and it's okay.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. That being said too, it's been a while since I did a check-in. So I went ahead and I just made a quick kind of survey Google Doc thing and sent it all out, got all their responses and stuff. And it's good. It's opened my eyes to a couple things that I need to be aware of. And, but I mean, everybody's having a fun time. So overall, good stuff.
That's the main goal.
Yeah. Yep. So I'm really happy about that. And then I can also just, you know, make sure I address a couple things that, you know, I'm not hitting as hard as I should as a DM. So I'm very happy for that feedback. But yeah.
Yeah. So having those check-ins, and we've talked about this before, having those check-ins is very important.
Yes, definitely.
It is.
Yeah, because so the last thing that we want,
a good thing to do,
is for someone to not being enjoying the game as much as they could. And, you know, this is one of the ways that as a DM, you're able to go in and find out, you know, where am I lacking in this? Or if anything, being able to kind of see things through their eyes to see what they like more, what they want more of, and things like that. So yeah, I'm glad that my little worrisome bit of, oh, they're just not going to do anything right now, turned into, we're going to make sure that they know they can, and we'll do a check-in. So came out pretty good, I think.
Good. Very good.
Yeah.
Very exciting. Excited to hear what they do.
And we're playing this Saturday, so I'm just soon stoked. Yeah. I can't wait because this is, I mean, they're at a party. So, you know, that's when all the shenanigans should be happening.
Yes.
I'm excited for this. So yeah, we'll see what happens. You know, we need to figure out what's going on with those diamonds that seem like they're made of people. So kind of an important thing.
Kind of an important thing.
Yeah. How about you? Were you able to play since last time?
Yes. Yes. So I started with a kind of a scary dream sequences, because something weird is happening. All the party members and apparently most of the people in the city district had these very scary, violent dreams.
Ooh.
Some of which carried over to real life.
Oh,
which was kind of interesting. So, like one of them, woke up, with their legs slightly burned because these ashen hands were reaching up for them in this burning village. One of them had a tiny bit of their hair singed off, or just, I should say deleted, because a mana bomb went off in their dreams and they were running from the explosion as ballooned outwards. One of them, hilariously, and I think I've talked about this before, the jug of like distilled magic essence,
mm-hmm,
that they found a while ago. One of the characters had stored it inside the ceiling of their shop. But above that ceiling is the apartment where one of the other player characters stays. And it apparently cannot be contained. So their dream thing ended up being far more real and actually started leeching off of some of that magical essence and manifested into very quick, like, roll initiative. And it was basically, I played them and tried to kill them with them. With their, like, I got their character sheet pulled up.
Oh, and wow.
And it came really close, like scarily close, like five HP difference. Close. And so that was kind of a fun little adrenaline pumper to start the session with. So then they did a little bit of investigation into all that, but it was a little, downplayed because there's the giant sporting event at the Coliseum that, one of the characters had been super looking forward to. So they started gathering some information, but it was kind of secondary to the, I got an invitation to this giant sporting event from one of the head honchos of the city that they met at the party back then. And so it was a really fun thing because I had a nice little collaboration with one of my players where he built out the teams for this champions dueling pit thing. And so what I ended up doing is we basically, while they were there, they were doing some side things. They were doing some investigating. They were doing some talking. But in between that, the actual event happened. And so what I did is I based it off of a 5-round thing where I would roll dice for each team up to five times and then just text him the roll results per team. And then he narrated it.
Oh. That's kind of cool.
No one knew what the outcome was going to be because I was, you know, rolling live to figure out which team is winning. And we allowed the players to place bets on the different teams as well. So it was really fun. I know he was very excited to do it and he did a great job of developing these little 4v4 teams. And we did two different ones because this was like the finals. So we had like a semifinal match and then a little bit of time passed, like an hour or so. And then they had the finals match. And then that's about where we ended the session. where the after party for that was about to happen. But it was very fun. And other than the crazy beginning, kind of a fun change of pace. And just being able to just build the lore of the world, which is super fun. And especially in a collaborative way with your players, which is always fun as well. So
that's awesome.
Very much looking forward to the next session as they start to put pieces together. But it was a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Very cool.
But yeah, that's it. I'll be playing again, hopefully in a week and a half or so. So I'm excited for your next session. I'm excited for my next session because D&D is a fun escape in these times. So I'm very, very happy to get together with this wonderful group of people, as I'm sure you are as well.
Definitely.
And get to play this game we love so much. But with that, that is going to be an episode for us. Thank you everybody so much for sticking with us and listening. We're excited to get back on the train. I know this, our schedule got thrown off a little bit, but we should be back on track now, which is really good. And for anyone who's new and or this might be the first time you're listening, Ben, why don't you tell everybody where we can be reached?
Definitely. So, you know, we've talked about the fact that this is episode 130. Well, guess what? There's 129 other episodes. You can find those on your podcast player of choice, of course, or you can always go to dndiscussions.com. There you'll find every episode we've ever done, as well as links to our socials. That's right. You can find us on Blue Sky. We are at DN Discussions. Ryan is at TBKZord. I am at Ben Bumhofer. And even more so, there is a link to our Discord. So if you want to go ahead and join in, we're always welcoming everybody that we can. You can join in on the discussions yourself and, you know, talk to us, talk to our wonderful supporters there and, you know, have a good old time. If for some reason you want to, you know, kind of keep your questions private or want to contact us about something else or, you know, just tell us about your plans for Sigil or, you know, some of the other VTTs you've done or what you think about the new Artificer, you can always email us. Send those to dndiscussions@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you there as well as on Discord and on Blue Sky. So anywhere you can find or anywhere you can find us there, we'll be there. Last but not least, there is another show called Plus Five to Hit, which I recommend listening to because if you want to listen to me in an actual play D&D podcast, Plus Five to Hit is the way to go. We just finished up Rime of the Frost Maiden about a month ago or so. So I am actually DMing now in our little interlude. It's going to be about four episodes or so. We've got one of them out released right now. Two more are recorded and ready to kind of be released as we kind of drip feed before we jump back into our main campaign. So if you want to hear what it's like when I DM, that's the best place to do it. Find out if I actually have the chops to do a show or if I'm just a poser.
He does, and you should.
Oh, well, thank you. But anyways, yeah, Plus Five to Hit. Definitely check that out. I think it's fun. I'm at least enjoying the sessions that I've been doing. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. That being said, though, this is DN Discussions. Ryan, it is always a pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much for being here this week, because otherwise me talking to myself is not as much fun. And everybody else, thank you very much for listening and supporting us. Until next time, roll high and be good to each other.
Take care, and we'll see you soon.